Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the fairgrounds, from New Orleans, for, I promise, what is anticipated to be the last time in 2023, right? Not that I couldn't manufacture reasons to come back, based on the schedule that we're aware of, a very good Friday, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And before I do anything else, because I know how it gets at 11:56, 11:57, 58, as we wrap up the Twin Spires weekend preview, I got to thank Jason Boulay and everybody involved, the two TV tech types that are here early morning and are your, you know, the absolute essential elements of putting anything on air at Fairgrounds. Ty and Lonnie, thanks to them. And as it happens, Ty is a major link historically to TV feeds around the game, and I'm going to tell you why. There's people that'll know this reference. I don't know if everybody does, but Ty Azel is the source of Soup of the Day, for those that remember Soup of the Day and the proliferation that it saw through the through TV feeds. Ty is the one who created Soup of the Day. And I said to him, you got to come on and tell the story. And he said, no. He said he couldn't do it. He said, but it all stemmed from a chalkboard here that had, you know, it had information fast and firm, and then up in the upper right hand corner, there was room for Soup of the Day, and Ty had the notion to make that part of the daily announcements, and people started to bet on it. only in racing, as the saying goes. Yeah, Soup of the Day. So thanks to Ty, and his team. And in fact, here's Chad. Wait a minute, Chad. Wait, Chad, are you gonna? Chad's telling me, Chad Chexnader, who happens to be cousins with Ty, is an Eclipse Award winner as well for Champions Day broadcast with Dave Johnson. How about that? So Dave's won like three Eclipses. How about that? Thank you, Chad. I appreciate it. I love when the show goes interactive. But anyway, I mean, we had that little hiccup yesterday, but that was totally a Jazz and Heritage Festival issue. Because what's going on here, and I should have realized what an undertaking. I mean, I've seen, having been involved in infield work when we did the barbecue, I know what goes into the setting up, but the upheaval here of what has gone on to set up for Jazz Fest. And speaking of fests, Tina and I had no idea when we booked into this trip. We're staying at Ben Bacik's Puntalba apartment, and we were until last night. We had to move to went to an interesting little hotel because we're leaving later today. But with French Quarter Festival, FQF, put this on your list. And maybe because it's mid-April, maybe it's a fest that you could attend. This is a little different. It's a free festival throughout the quarter. There's five stages and five areas, and people bring their chairs and they set up all day by one of the stages, and they, you know, the acts just unfold. It kicked off yesterday with a parade, because you can't do anything in this town without a parade. We were sitting at a little restaurant, a little bar kitchen called Sylvain, that is very, very good actually on Charter, and while we were having a light bite the other night, it was like 6 o'clock, two different wedding parades came through with the band accompaniment, and with, you know, replete with umbrellas and the whole, you know, the whole jazz funeral style parade. This town just does not quit. It's unbelievable how much fun with the eating. I mean, I don't drink anymore, but I drank at other trips years ago here. It's just unbelievable. And you know, we told you about Tuesday and the dinner at Brightson's. Went to this Sylvain that is, you know, it's amazing how many little bar joints there are where, you know, where it says bar/kitchen. And in the kitchen is some classically trained chef that's churning out terrific fare. It's unbelievable. So this little Sylvain that I had walked by a million times, and out of the blue, Michael Bacik sent me a note. He said, you know, right around the corner from the apartment, Sylvain. And I was like, oh my God, I told Tina just last night I wanted to go. So we went the other night. I think we went, would have been Wednesday night. Excellent. Then last night, because I can't leave town without a visit, I'm not a huge steak eater, but Mr. John's on St. Charles in the Garden District, which we discovered, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And so we went back to Mr. John's last night, and I got to tell you, I don't rave about steaks too often. Just unbelievable. Plus, they have a bacon-wrapped shrimp that's stuffed with crab. Get out of here with that. Come on. And then there was another. So, and Tina had a strip. The food was unbelievable. And then, instead of having dessert there, I had the inspired notion, because I make bananas Foster for Tina. I turned to her and I said, we're going to go to Brennan's. Let's go. And so we hopped streetcar back toward the quarter, and I took her to Brennan's. And here's a little Brennan's secret. If you want to go for Bananas Foster or Rum Baba, go to the bar. Don't even worry about it. Go right around the corner to the little, I think it's, the, what is it? The not the Jungle Bar. There's a name for it. The bar was half empty. And there was tableside Bananas Foster for Tina. So she's now had Bananas Foster where they invented it. Finally, final push. Again, Michael, the Bacik's are, they're unbelievable resource. Michael had said he had heard about a Dobash shop, a bakery, and it turns out it's Dobash by Debbie, and she's got her own shop, Debbie by the Levee, but bakery bar under the shadow of I-10. My God, the, you know, Dobesh cake is, you know, that like almost like a 15 layer cake, you know, the 7 layer cake, you know what I mean? The multi layers. Yeah. So we walked the other day. What was that? That might've been Wednesday. That was Wednesday for lunch. We walked through the warehouse district to bakery bar. Unbelievable. We had the little Dobesh bites. We had like six of them, so we could taste all the flavors. So, bakery bar. This has been, I'll put up all the pictures. I've been very slow about getting pictures out. All right, so anyway, we've had just an amazing time. Tina's had a fabulous vacation, and we'll head back today. And then immediately go to Rochester on Saturday to see the grandchildren. I, Unbelievable. So, and then home. I'll be home a week, and we leave next Friday. Week from today, we'll be winging to the Ville. Speaking of winging to the Ville, we're going to wing right away. There's not a lot to follow up on from yesterday and the last couple of days. Although, I suppose I can save it for Nick. Give you a quick rundown. Marty now. We got to get James Scully in early. James has got some things he's got to handle, so he was looking for an early visit. Marcus Hirsch is going to check in, and we'll do some game plan. We'll do some Derby watch. We'll get his post-prep snapshot. You know, he's been watching replays. You can tell if you're following him on Twitter. He's been a veritable font. So we'll talk to Marcus. Nice stake card, the Preakness and Black Eyed Susan play-in. Seeing as how we got these NBA play-in games, right? The Preakness and Black Eyed Susan play-in at Laurel tomorrow. Weber City Miss and the Tessio, Federico Tessio. Callie Francois will join us, which is always fun. And Nick Tamaro was mentioned. We'll check in with Hammer, even though it's a intermezzo weekend at Santa Anita between the winter meet and the spring meet. We'll see what Hammer's up to. Shap. We'll get to Scott Shapiro. Get Shap's plays, and of course the Count Fleet at Oaklawn, and then the big matchup at Oaklawn with the Apple Blossom as well. And I told you about Nick. Who am I missing? I think we're going to finally get right at the end. I think at the end today, maybe at 11:45 for the last 15 minutes, I think we got a chance to talk to Billy Stinson Jr. And I've been waiting all week to get him in and line him up. So I think we'll get a congratulations in to Billy Stinson. All right? So there it is. And the pick six carryover yesterday, pretty formful in New York. There was, what, you had the 10-1 shot, Mercanti for Mott, which pretty amazing, that maiden race that, let that one get by, a Carl Pollard homebred. And there was, I think, what was there, a 6-1? Yeah, reigning chick for Patty Reynolds. Those were the two tough horses. Otherwise, it was all chalky. And if you got those two on your ticket, you got $52.75, which is nice, right? Yeah, that was all right. And it feels like a sequence that a lot of people cashed. So, all right, let's get Marty, right? Let me get Marty McGee, who's got 20 minutes for us this morning. And Marty, I'm sure, still taking in the congratulations, undoubtedly, from far and wide as the public absorbed his announcement the other day. Whoa, what are you doing? Marty McGee, Mart. How many texts, how many emails, how many phone calls?
Pretty many. It's been humbling. You know, you hear from people you haven't heard from in a long time, from various walks, and it's been overwhelming, really. So the last 72 hours, and Joe's excited, I'm excited. Joe won a race here at Keeneland yesterday and rode him like a champ, rode her like a champ, a filling in quality star for Paulo Lobo, and that's the way they draw it up on the blackboard. He smoothed the horse into an early rhythm and saved the ground, tipped out at the quarter pole. Like Joe likes to say in the paddock, he goes, you know, you don't even need to give me instructions. He says, here's what I'm doing. I'm I'm tracking them, tipping out, win by five, see it, shenanigans. That's a plug for shenanigans, our favorite haunt on Norris Place, very close to Bellarmine, that my buddy, actually my daughter Kelly's godfather, Eddie Cupper, owned shenanigans.
Outstanding. I, you know, here, we welcome those kinds of pushes. So Shenanigans. All right, we'll make them today's sponsor. Shenanigans. I love it.
Unpaid at that.
That's fine. Marty, the action, and I said yesterday when I was sort of tipping my hand about the weekend preview, brought to you by Twin Spires, that it really kind of set in with me yesterday that, you know, the byline and you know, these last, essentially, these last three-plus weeks, it's hard to believe. I mean, it's, you know, these conversations, I mean, we'll obviously, you'll come on and we'll do plenty of previewing of races, but it's just different. A countdown that you can now, you know, you can see the wire now. So we got to make the most of it.
I hope so. You know, it's kind of surreal the way it's all happening, but you know, all things must end. None of us are going to be here forever. So at some point, I was going to have to do this, and I think the timing's right. And yeah. So right. By the way, you wrote something on Twitter about my last Derby. I will not be riding the Derby this year. That's falling to Dave Grenning, and wow. Which is fine. You know, I did it in Jay's stead, which would have been in the September 2020 Derby, and then the following year Jay didn't come. That was 2021, the ill-fated Medina Spirit Derby. I ended up riding all that stuff, but Jay was back last year, and now Dave is taking over the reins. So I'll go out quietly and humbly, and live the rest of my life, forever after, happily ever after.
Happily ever after, indeed. All right. Well, then let's make the most of your the final Keeneland thoughts here the next couple of weeks. And today, the Grade One, the Maker's Mark. We've got Modern Games that I guess can't lose, apparently.
You know, I loved him in the mile last year, and you watch that race, and he only won by three quarters of a length, but my gosh, was that a comfortable three quarters of a length. He was like a harness horse when you see him come smoking down the lane and passing a bunch of horses. That's the way it was last year. I was kind of unaware, though, reviewing his record, that he's been so unbeatable here. He's 3-for-3 in grade ones in the U.S. and Canada. But overseas, I think his record overall is like 4-for-10. So they must have some real monsters over there, Vic, or something. But he comes in here in good form. The race itself, you know, even without him, would be a terrific renewal of this the Maker's Mark Mile. But with him in there, this is an outstanding 35th running. 22nd running. Wait, 22nd? Yeah.
What do we think? I mean, in terms of alternate, is there an alternate dialogue?
Well, I'm going to bet, I'm betting him over up to the mark. I mean, that horse, when he won off, I think it was on the Holy Bull Day in his first time on the grass for Todd Fletcher. He was terrific, and then I tried to beat him the next time. I think he was 4-5 when he ran against Fountain of Youth Day. Yeah, then he ran on his first one was on Pegasus Day on the grass, and then he won very impressively again on Fountain of Youth Day. And he's a real up and comer for me. And Nick Camaro is leading 10-1 on the line. That's about right with your 3-5 shot in there. So. I'm cold 7-2.
All right. The feature today, the Maker's Mark, goes off at 5:16. How about the turf sprint that comes earlier? Nice, bulky 12-horse field. They're making Love Reigns from Wesley, the favorite, 7-2. We got Dance Macabre for Kelsey Danner, who enjoyed a terrific first quarter of the year. Florida and shipping around. Limestone thought.
I'm trying to look at my Hermes picks here. What is today? The 14th?
Today is the 14th.
Yeah. Okay. I'm pretty sure I got Kelsey in there. No, I have a horse named My Sweet Affair over Kelsey. So My Sweet Affair is number two. George Weaver. Oh, that horse won from, it was the day after the Fountain of Youth, from the open air outside box, drew in as number 13, My Sweet Affair. And she was all the rage. So I'm going to give a big chance to I Read on another number two at 10 to 1 in the fourth running of the Limestone. So I got a 212 with Kelsey, who, you know, even in the winner circle after the Here Comes a Bride on Fountain of Youth Day, she said, I think we're going to, we were just trying this race when she won going a mile, her first attempt around two turns. And then she said, I think we'll just wait for the shorter race, shorten her back up for the Limestone. And here she is, and she has the open air outside box. So I think it's the 2 and 12 in that race.
Very good. All right. My Sweet Affair, 10 to 1 for George. And just, I finally did get to do some printing. And I was going to say, Randy Hill, I wasn't sure if the Reeves were involved. This is Randy with Matt Gatsis and company.
Really, and nice. They knew in quotation marks, they knew that horse would win.
Well, my favorite is when I get to go online and say, they didn't know.
I do. I had a friend, he says, he just couldn't stand it when somebody would say, I knew that horse was going to win. No, you did not, because nobody knows.
You know, there is a horse in there we should mention, because we had Daniel Leach on last fall, and American Apple comes back for her 3-year-old debut. This is the Katie Rich out of Miss Mary Apples, and that matron win at Aqueduct kind of set her up, and you know, she felt like maybe a clever idea at a giant price in the Juvenile Turf Sprint in the Breeders' Cup, and she did not run badly. She got beat 7. She split the field, split the field in there. So American Apple,
right there, right there at the top of the lane. You know, you got your money for it
Big time. Big time. That unfortunately had a couple too many thrills like that in that Breeders' Cup. Had a couple of huge prices that ended up, you know, picking up minor checks. But ran.
Yeah, you ran okay. You probably had blue stripe. I've heard sob stories about her.
No. I mean, not the way. No, I didn't actually. The way Michael did. The way Welsh did. But. The miler, the European miler that ran a monster race. And in fact, I talked about that horse maybe a month or two ago, that Christophe Clement has got her in down in Florida. And I'm anxious to hear when she's going to show up. We should also mention Camp Aquila again. This is the namesake project horse of Joel Politi, Dr. Politi, and Tom Amos. Camp Aquila, the facility in Maine or New Hampshire, that I don't want to say special needs, helps, specializes in I don't want to say just autistic, because it's not, I don't think it's limited to that, but you get the idea. Camp Aquila, and comes back in this spot 20 to 1 off the maiden, and then the try in the Black Cat Lacombe. All right, anything else? Who's your best play? Who was your best bold type today?
Yesterday it was Quality Star, and I got out. So today. Come on, Vic. You got it there in front of me.
I do. I distinctly.
You know what? I've been riding this morning. I got up here early, and I went down a rabbit hole because Rick Strike worked this morning at 5:30. Guess how? And I'm writing about Derby winners who did not win subsequent to their Derby victory. Since 1994, Gopher Jen, who won the Derby and did not win afterwards. Guess how many Derby winners have not won subsequent to the Derby?
You mean historically, the whole breadth of the Derby, 148?
Since 1994.
Since
1994? Yeah, that'd be the last, 30 years?
Yeah.
So 29 years?
Essentially. That's an interesting question.
Because from 74, when Candidate did not win another one. From 75, Foolish Pleasure through Sea Hero, all 19 of those won. But since 94 with Go for Gin, there's been X number of Derby winners to not win again. Take a stab.
I will say 7.
11.
Ooh, I should have taken the over.
And so Rich Strike would be the 12th, but Rich, Eric was talking very confidently that he will win again. We were joking, of course, what are you going to run him in a 2X at Belterra or Mountaineer? And he said, no, he's going to run in 3 graded stakes at Churchill, and he's going to start with the Ally Sheba. He's not going to run here next Saturday in the Ben Ally, which had been kind of penciled in. But Eric said this morning after Rich Strike worked 5/8 and 59 and change that he feels like he needs one more tightener in him, and then he's going to run him in the Ally Sheba, which, of course, is on the May 5th Kentucky Oaks undercard. So that'll be the return. Then he'll subsequently run in the Foster in June, maybe a race in between that and the Lucas Classic in September, and then that would probably set him up for the Breeders' Cup. So, I mean, it is an ambitious schedule. But if you go back and look at Rich Strike's buyers, you know, 3 of his 4 races between the Belmont and the Clark, actually, the 3 races after the Belmont until the Clark, he ran buyers of 101, 105, and 106. So that's the big leagues. And I certainly hope he will avoid joining that list of 11 who won the Derby and didn't win subsequent to that.
Interesting. I look forward to that.
So, yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Is that in the Sunday paper?
Yes, it will be.
There you go, folks. See, maybe this is the 11th hour second eclipse for TRF McGee.
Shut up, man.
distinctly possible, by the way, as is a second eclipse for you. Is your best bet today in the 6? Chad Brown, second choice with Tyler Gaffleone. Let's talk about tomorrow and the Jenny Wiley and the Lexington and the Giants Causeway. And let's start with the Lexington since we're on the 3-year-old Derby kick. And here is Disarm, who only needs to be 3rd to make it into the Derby field and push out Jace's Road, at least temporarily, and push down Skinner.
Yeah, we still got a long way to go on that. I'm trying to not even think about that cluster we've got there at the bottom with the 40 and 45 points. But Disarm, obviously with 40 points, all he needs to do really is run
3rd.
2nd or 3rd.
Yep.
I've got him picked 2nd, and I went way outside the box in this one with Prairie Hawk, who I know that Staffy just last week pulled off a stunner at Aqueduct with Lord
Miles.
And of course, Lord Miles in the wood. And this wouldn't be that big of a price. I'm going to give him about 15-1 on Prairie Hawk in what is really a wide open race. I studied the race for a long time yesterday before writing about it. I actually got a call from Bob Baffert on, what would that have been, Wednesday, about Arabian Lion. I assume this is the first horse Baffert has run in Kentucky since the Breeders' Cup last year here at Keeneland. But, you know, he's willing to give him another chance. The pace is kind of tricky to figure out. There's a couple of long shots in there that maybe have a chance to make the lead, but otherwise it's going to be, IRAD. Depending on how Arabian Lion jumps, he's likely to be among the first flight.
It's a fun group, the Tory's presence for Mott, Empire Strikes Fast. You've got Johnny for Safi Joseph on Prairie Hawk at 15-1. Very nice. Brad Cox sends the pair, Demolition Duke and First Mission. Neil Pessin comes back. Baseline beater. And I'm sure that anybody with a good performance in here has a chance to show up in the Preakness entry box as well. All right. How about the Jenny Wiley, Mart, where obviously Chad looms large, but with the moonlight shows up for that man, Charlie Appleby. Plus, we got a couple of other players. Here's DeTorian Mott again with White Frost outposted. And Pizza Bianca trying to get her mojo back for Bobby Flay. What are you doing here?
This is a field of nine. It's the 10th race. It's a field of nine, but at least two of them are going to scratch. That would be number seven, Henrietta Topham, and number eight, Freedom Speaks. They're both going in an allowance on Sunday, so that leaves a field of seven. I mean, everybody and their brother saw the trouble that White Frost got in at Gulfstream on the Fountain of Youth undercard. She came screaming home, probably was best in the race. So I've got her picked second to the horse who looks like she'll walk the dog in Italian. You know, normally I might not like her in this kind of spot. She's 7-5 on the line, probably tips maybe a touch below even money, but her buyers, Steve, and the Diana, the First Lady, and the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf are just superior to what these other horses have run. So she got 102, 104, 104. Looks like the way it's going to unfold is going to be in her favor. You got the ever-confident Irad riding her. So I've got it 2-9 in here with an Italian over White Frost.
All right. I thought that Queen Goddess, we yesterday with Jeff Franklin, we did the Thoroughgraph, win with Thoroughgraph conversation, and I will prominently include Queen Goddess for Michael W. McCarthy.
Crafty. I love Crafty. I haven't heard about him for a long time.
We've sort of revived the Crafty moniker, actually, because his you know, his intimate friends know the Crafty tag, and he hasn't used his Twitter, which is Crafty JF. So we're trying to get him reoriented to the modern world.
Oh man, Crafty from out of the clouds.
I love it. What about the Giants Causeway? Interesting group assembles here. The Phillies and Mares going 5.5. We've got an overflow crowd that starts the bidding at 4-1 with Wesley and Johnny with Happy Soul.
Now, what race is that?
That's the eighth. Excuse me.
Eighth. I have Amy C over Star Divine and Ivra. And man, that is a good race with all the speed in there, all the wind streaks on the line, and what is it? Is this not even a graded race?
Not yet.
That is,
no, no.
That is incredible that it's not a graded race. Because,
well, is it?
From every corner, you've got the best filling air turf sprinters, don't you?
Yeah.
Fairgrounds, California, New York, here, Florida. I mean, this is a great race.
It's a nice race, and I'm just wondering, this isn't a conditional, right? This isn't like a non-winners of a sweepstake that would, it's a listed stake.
Listed, but it's not graded. Yeah, I'll bet you dinner that it's graded next year.
Well, the turf sprint division in general has been a little, slow, gathering that kind of those kinds of honors. I do want to mention a couple of things about this race. I mean, and I'm a big Amy C fan, and we've talked to D'Amato about her. And the one question I've got is 5.5 too sharp for her, given how adept she is coming down the hill. She feels to me like more like a the miler. The Jiper, the 7-furlong type distance, the 6.5 down the hill, which caters to the milers. So I don't know. This is sharp. Twilight Gleaming in here, 9-2, coming back for Wesley as a 4-year-old. There is a now horse in here at 8-1, and it's Little Jewel, who is the 5-year-old mare that we talked to Carlo Vacareza about after she won the Captiva Island. And she's tactical. She's got the almost open air outside box. And Castellano signs on here. Little Jewel at 8-1 feels like the emergent horse. It took, you know, Carlos stuck it out with her, Marty, to get her to the races. I'm very intrigued at 8-1.
I'm a big Carlo fan, but you know, Steve, the difference between 5 furlongs and 5.5 is sizable in these kind of races, because the horses who might normally win at Gulfstream going 5/8 and 56 or whatever, they tend to get a little late down the lane here. The stretch is long here, and that's why I'm going with a stretch runner like Amy C.
Well, finally, we should mention that, let's see, you've got Tarabi as your best bet Saturday.
Yeah, she won't even be favored either. You know, Cherise bringing her off the layoff. Actually, she's 2-1 on the line, which surprises me, because there was a couple of horses in there. Top Gun Girl, Radio Days. I guess everybody's caught on to the open air outside box. So,
you know why?
Yeah, let's go.
You know why they've caught on?
Because the air is fresh and clear out there? I don't know why.
Exactly. The air is fresh and clear. Oh, boy.
All right, Dick. You kept me more than 20 minutes.
No. Wait a minute. We've got one horse to talk about. On Sunday, the Palisades, the 3-year-old boys, are turf sprinting themselves, and it's the long-awaited return for the Cougar herself. Michelle Lovell comes back. Damon's Mound. And Damon's Mound has got the open air outside box.
He's never run. That's good for him. But he's never run on the grass, so I would be skeptical. As a matter of fact, I think I've got him second to somebody in there. I don't have the picks in front of me, but I do have him second. But yeah, he's an easy horse to root for, by the way.
Well, so. Michelle is also easy to root for. There is the Beaumont, of course, as the feature on Sunday. These are the 3-year-old fillies going 7/8. And did I read that? Is there a threat of wet weather?
Yeah, it's supposed to happen like from Saturday night into Sunday morning and then clear off. So I would expect probably a fast track here. I like Eddie Keneally in there, by the way. Got one at Fairgrounds, and there's a ton of gas in there. I'm skeptical on Key of Life, who'll make all the running from her open air outside box. But with the one under her Shoplifter for Eddie.
Marty McGee making all the running on this Friday morning. Mark, good luck this weekend. We will talk next week.
Calamo! See you, Mick.
He's unbelievable. Marty McGee. The visit that's fresh and clear. I love it. All right, let's get Scully in here because I promised I'd get him in. And Marcus Hirsch, top of the hour as well. We got Schaap coming by. Scott Shapiro, I'm sure we'll talk some Hot Springs, Ha-Cha-Cha, and Callie Francois. Yes. All right, it's all happening. James Scully is next. We're in that kind of frolicky mood, I think. I'm also punchy, let's be honest. It's hard. I must say, getting home will be refreshing, although Tina's only letting me spend one night in the bed at home before we hustle off to Rochester. Got to see the babies. Got to see the baby. James, you got to see the baby.
No, you do, Steve. I mean, you're racking up the miles already, early 2023. Just the constant travel, it sounds like, for you.
It's ridiculous. But it's paid off. Let's put it that way. It's been so much fun. Let's dive right in, and I suppose that we could. I got to get the penultimate Kentucky Derby report, right? We've only got one prep left. So talk about last Saturday and what you discerned out of it.
I thought the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby were fast races with serious contenders for the Kentucky Derby in them. I thought Tappa Trice, you know, like a lot of people said, I thought it was a better performance in the Tampa Bay Derby. I think, you know, I mean, if Edwards draws an outside post in the Kentucky Derby, I don't think Luis Saez is going to be too worried about ground loss. He's just going to ride him like he's the best horse to try to stay out of trouble. So I definitely respect his chances big time. And I really like Verifying's effort. I thought it was a huge step forward upon anything he had ever shown before. You know, he's out there just tracking some speed horse, Clear the Air, that ran last, who's just winging it out front. And, you know, he's the type of horse that if he catches a flyer, you know, I mean, I can, you know, we've seen this before, but when we saw Medina Spirit, where he couldn't keep up early with Rock Your World in the Santa Anita Derby, and then he's on front when he breaks in the Derby. So to me, Verifying is going to be in the top five early. He could be on the lead potentially, and that makes him dangerous. And he's got the leading rider at Churchill Downs on his back, and Tyler Gaffleone. In the Santa Anita Derby, you know, I know Practical Joke just held on by a nose, and people are concerned about the mile and a quarter, but he still had to dig deep. I mean, he could have given it up before the wire. I thought it was a pretty courageous, hard-fought effort that bodes well for, you know, I think a tough prep like that will help a horse a lot of times going to the Derby. And, you know, he got one in there, and he prevailed. And I thought Mandarin Hero ran huge. I think having one start in the U.S. before the Derby at Santa Anita or Keeneland or Gulfstream or Aqueduct, I think that gets a horse acclimated to the entire like culture change that they're going to face at Churchill Downs, and I think it's a benefit for Mandarin Hero. So I hope he gets four defections, because I think he could be a contender in the Derby. I'm going to make any international horse ship it straight over for the Derby. Prove it to me. I'm not going to use them in the race. So I came away, you know, really, I like the top two in both races. I wasn't too thrilled with the I thought Lord Miles got the right trip in the Wood Memorial, but he'll be way further back in the Derby. It'd be tough for him to reproduce that. And, you know, Hit Show's a horse I'll look for more down the road from him too.
You know, it is, I'm glad you included Verifying as part of the, you know, the postscript, because everybody was so you know, so taken with Tappet Trice and the way in which Saez moved into the race seemingly early and then, you know, finished with aplomb. But Verifying deserves a ton of credit for that effort. And, you know, I really haven't seen where he's getting nearly as much attention coming out of it, and it sort of reminds me of going back to the San Felipe and Fountain of Youth Saturday, where you know the focus was on Forte, and Practical Move was sort of a you know, an afterthought, and it's like people are trying to find reasons to not go forward with Practical Move, and I don't really get that. It's just very interesting how the Derby, the Derby mojo, essentially, from public conversation, you know, where it gravitates, if you know what I mean. It's kind of a random mistress, as it were. I'm intrigued. I mean,
I'm looking at it, and you know, I mean, three of the top four finishers in the Derby last year got six or more starts to their credit. Verifying's run six times. I think that's going to benefit him. I think he's got a better chance of getting out of the gate than Kingsbarn does. If Kingsbarn breaks, maybe so. But, you know, getting out of that gate, I think, isn't easy for a lightly raced horse unless, you know, they really have the goods.
It's a great point.
And, you know, I mean, like Justify. I mean, none of these horses were running like 115 speed ratings in the Santa Anita Derby. So, you know, he's like a complete anomaly. And, so I think that Verifying, he really, that's a fast race, too, on the Brisnet numbers. That both he and Tappet Trice get a 102. That's one of the top, like, numbers any of these horses have run. And, yeah, he's a kind of dangerous overlooked horse with tactical speed. You know, it's a situation in the Derby from 2016 to 2021 where the horse that finishes first is up there either first or second, you know, or in the top, you know, real close, you know, it's sitting in a prime spot, not taking any kickback, and, you know, they're getting the trip. And so, you know, really last year was an anomaly for the pace, because that these horses are always, you know, they can run 22 and change every year in the Derby, sorting themselves out early. But it's really those internal fractions, the second and third quarter, that tend to be moderate. Last year, they were fast in the second and third quarter, and that left Epicenter a leg weary in the final eighth of a mile. But the move that Epicenter makes last year to take a clear lead at the top of the stretch, that wins 9 out of 10 Derbies every single time. So there's, you know, you got to be in position turning for home. You're just not going to come rolling past horses in the stretch at Churchill Downs.
What's your early read, James? And obviously we'll do this in 2 weeks when I get to town, but what's your early read on odds and you know, how you think the race gets bet? I mean, assuming we don't have to worry about the bottom rungs right this second, but what's your expectation about, you know, the top end of on the betting scale?
I think, you know, it's hard for me to get a real good feel for this Dermis Sotigate, but I got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of money bet on him, and he's going to get bet down, and he could be the second choice. And I'm looking at Forte at like 5-2, 3-1 range. I think a lot of horses are going to take money. You know, you get a situation where you're going to get one of these horses that won a prep race. It's going to be double digit odds. I mean, we saw it in 2012. I'll have another. He comes back. He wins the Robert Lewis by open. He comes back and he wins the Santa Anita Derby, and he beats Creative Cause in that race, who was coming off a win over Bodemeister in the San Felipe. And that horse is 12-1 in the Derby because, you know, he gets just got a little bit lost in the shuffle. So I see horses like Angel of Empire definitely being like, you know, 12-1 or higher. And there's going to be some value for horses like that if you like. I do think that Tappa Trice and Therma Sotigate, though, will be the second and third choice in one order another behind Forte.
All right, I just was curious. There's some interesting reads from there's a real varied view of how the odds shake out. All right, that gets us into the weekend, and even though I'm sure you'll have some Friday ideas, we'll get to those. Let's actually talk first about the Lexington, because it really is got some influence with this arms presence in there and the opportunity to you know, reach out and grab a brass ring here at the 11th hour.
Yes, I mean, I if you like this arm for the Derby, I think you'd like to see him win this race, but he's facing some good horses. I mean, this first mission really looks like he could be a good one for Brad Cox to me. And, you know, I mean, Empire Strikes Fast, beating Dream like he did last time, really bodes well for that Empire Maker gelding. And to me, Arabian Lion's coming in here. He's going right to the lead from the outside with Irad Ortiz, and he's going to try to rebound for Bath. Effort with blinkers on. So, you know, there's some quality in that race. I do think, you know, Disarm, though, potentially is going to get a decent setup. You know, I think Arabian Lion could be taking some pressure by the far turn, and if he's good enough, he'll roll by him. One horse I am a little intrigued at, just from a long shot perspective, just in case he could sit a good trip from the inside, I thought, and then that's that Transect, the four horse. Probably not good enough to win it, but his first two races at Turfway were really strong, open length wins that were better, that looked better than they even do on paper. And he got bet down to 8-1 in that Gotham, didn't break over that muddy track, but he's drawn inside the speed to me. And if he gets out there with Corrales, even if he isn't in front, if he's up close, sitting second or third, he could hit the board at huge odds. That's one thing about this Keeneland meet, Steve, is I mean, the purses at Turfway Park have risen so significantly the last 2 years that the racing quality there was so much better that now these Turfway horses are coming to Keeneland and they're making an impact. And we have bigger fields than we've had in the spring before. Yesterday was a good example, along with the horse from Marty's Quality Star. You had Indy again win it 5-1. And you had three horses from Turfway run second, and one of them's 17-1 and the other one's 38-1. So those horses are not only winning and hitting the board there. They were running for, $75,000 maiden special weight and $80,000 allowance purses this winter. So the racing quality was just a lot better.
All right. This is a good group and makes the card even that much more exciting and interesting.
And then I got some plays on the undercard I'll give you real quick.
Yep.
If you want me to. I like James Aloysius in race 3. I'm intrigued by that horse. I think he's going to be a nice horse. I'm not sure, how much he'll get bet down, but 4-1 with Lee Saez for Danny Gargan. I'm going to go. That was a turf allowance, so I'm going to go to the next turf allowance, race number 5. And I like My Red Rod in Blue for Louis Roussel. I think you can make the case that, if he gets out of the gate, he might have been the best horse in that black gold last time. He came up a neck short. But this is a horse that, to me, is going to appreciate stretching back out to 9 furlongs where he broke his maiden. He's going to come. If he can sit a little bit closer, I think he can finish up for Jareth Loveberry and prove best in that race 5. And he's 4-1 on the morning line, not the favorite. So I'm going to play My Red, Rod, and Blue in race 5.
Very good. And we should mention, don't forget the $3 Keeneland Turf Pick 3. And you got to check each day that it's the last three turf races. It doesn't have to be the last three turf races, but generally it is. The 5th, the 8th, and the 10th are the Saturday turf pick 3s, and today the 5th, 7th, and 9th are the turf pick 3.
And I got one more pick for Saturday there. In that Giants Causeway, I like number 1 Train to Artemis with Frankie Dettori picking up the mount. And I just have liked how this mare, this former claimer, has come on this winter, Steve. And one thing I like about her is that her last win, a stake win, 2 back by open lengths, was from the rail. In fact, when she's drawn inside, Train to Artemis runs big. And I think that, I think she's going to get the right, I hope Frankie can get her out of the gate and sit up close and be in position to pounce starting for home. And I don't think that's the strongest field in there. And I think 8-1 on the morning line is a good price. I like number 1 Train to Artemis in the Giants Causeway.
Interesting. 8-1. And the presence of Dettori certainly doesn't hurt.
No. And then one other horse that in the Count Fleet at Oaklawn Park on Saturday, I like Candyman Rocket. This is a horse that raced, they threw him in those Triple Crown races and he won the Sam F. Davis at 1/16, but they cut him back to a sprint and he ran a real good race after the Belmont or after the Wood Memorial and he was done. I mean, he ran once in a 2-year period and that was an easy win last year at Gulfstream, but he has come back this year, won at a lounge by open lens, won that Gulfstream listed sprint stake by open lens, and he's going to be fit. I mean, here's a horse that just did not race Harley for 2 years. I think his best races are still in front of him, and he's got to go up against some horses for the courses for sure in that Cal Fleet. But I'm going to look for Bill Mott to ship in there and swoop it with Candyman Rocket.
Yesterday, the same mention that I had with Marty earlier. Yesterday with Jeff Franklin, we talked about the Cal Fleet on the Thoroughgraph conversation, and I felt the same way about Candyman Rocket, and don't think that Frank Fletcher being in attendance at his home track isn't part of the equation as well. So I agree. 6-1 is a nice number. That's a fun race.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, what about Friday? What about today at Keeneland?
Well,
Marty was saying that if he was going to play straight exact, I think he had the modern games over, I forget, somebody else. But if I was looking at it that way, I'd play him over Shea Pierre. I might even turn it around as a saver because I give that horse a shot. Now, he might not break running and get out there on the lead like I could sort of see. But I thought coming by from the layout, first off, those two races he ran last year I thought were really nice efforts for Delacour. The horse he beat in the allowance won a stake race his next start out. So, he ran two big races last year. He came back, he was pushing the pace hard in that last stake race that Emmanuel won. And, I think that there's less speed, potentially early speed in this Maker's Mark, and being drawn inside, if Flavian Pratt sends Shea Pierre, he could potentially be setting the pace and get a good trip, and he's got some quality to him. And he's like an upset contender in there for me.
I like it. And we certainly like Shea Pierre, the Route 9 restaurant between Wilton and Saratoga, the French joint. And Delacour and Pratt and Shea Pierre. It doesn't get more and Callie Francois later on today. It's a French fest around here. All right.
It really is. And one last Friday late push. I'm going to give a horse at Aqueduct in the finale today.
Holy
at
cow.
Big odds. Number 12, Mischief Motion, 15-1, exits a runner-up finish, switching the turf, daughter of Into Mischief. And the second dam is like a turf stakes winner and has thrown turf runners. And there's a bunch of turf in this female family. I look for this Midnight Mischief to make a really good transition off of an encouraging effort. I know it's a cheap maiden claimer, but she's listed 15-1 on the morning on. So I did take a look at that race, and that's my late Friday, late second push, last second push, the 12 in the finale at Aqueduct.
Very good. All right. I like it. And a 3773 in the Maker's Mark mile today. All right. James, I appreciate it. I'll check in with Shap next hour about the leaderboard, and we want to see if, in fact, anybody can catch the leader after last weekend. If with the 20 points in the Lexington.
Oh, and the Keeneland leaderboard competition. I mean, 20 people split 20 split 10 grand, and it only runs Friday through Sunday. So there's hop in it today, and you can play the this weekend and the remaining weekends, and still have a chance in that competition.
Very good. I appreciate it. James Scully, everybody. James, good luck.
All righty. Same to you, Steve. Thanks.
We'll talk to James next week. Let's jump quickly to Marcus. Steve Anderson is going to join us as well next hour. I've shoehorned him in. And that, of course, tied to the action at Aintree with the Grand National tomorrow. And Steve Anderson is, DRF Anderson is big on it, and it's one of his favorite things. So we will get an opinion from him. I tried to get Kev to join us live, but he has got a work function that he's at right now. And his analysis for tomorrow's Grand National card, Long Shot Lad picks, will be up pretty early tomorrow morning, all right? And I'll get those up for everybody. Let's get Marcus in here, and we'll spend 20 minutes with Marcus, kind of get his take on the Derby watch front, as well as some game plan action, and I'm sure he'll have a Keeneland opinion in addition to his Derby trail, Derby watch conversation. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Sorry, I was in the middle of making coffee.
Well, I should not stop you from that because nobody.
You're not going to.
something tells me you've got an ornate coffee machine.
Oh God, no! I'm not a collector of stuff like that at all.
So what are you making coffee with?
Well, I've got a little plastic filter holder. I got a little filter. I got a water boiler. I just ground my beans. And now I'm pouring it over. Simple as anything.
Well, you're posturing that it's simple, but if you're grinding and you've got that filter, it's almost like a Chemex style.
Correct, but it's a single cup.
Ah, you got.
I will say, before I took my wife to work this morning, I made us both cappuccinos.
See, I you're not. You're...
But this is like a 40-year-old Krups tiny espresso maker. It couldn't be more simple. Yeah. And I'm not. I mean. Okay, I like coffee and I'll work for it, but I don't have anything fancy. I don't have any fancy setup. I want to make that clear.
You're not getting away with it. You got cappuccino. You've got the occasional latte. You got yourself a Chemex.
I don't like lattes.
Well, that little single cup thing is a Japanese thing, right? The glass filter.
I don't have a glass one. I used to have one. It broke. I have a red plastic one.
All right.
So you got to get a paper filter that you put inside it.
Right. All right. And the coffee fans, they're now counting you as one of their own.
It's dark roast. I mean, real coffee, people wouldn't drink that, you know. And I'm going to put half and half in it. I'm not that much of a connoisseur.
All right. But you're a fan.
People love, the real connoisseurs love that, like, medium and light roast sour stuff.
No. You know where Tina and I have been all, you know, I'm still in New Orleans, and...
You are?
Yeah. I've been here all week.
What are you doing there?
Tina wanted to come for her school break.
Oh, okay.
Who am I to say no for a third trip this year already?
Is it hot? Is it super humid yet?
No,
or not?
It's glorious. In fact, it's been cool, and then today it just dawned beautifully. We had our first experience yesterday at French Quarter Festival, and obviously I'm coming to you from the fairgrounds, and the Jazz Fest has taken over.
Oh God, that's right.
This has been a bit of a revelation, actually. Something tells me we'll be back here at this time of year.
I see. Okay, great. Man, you get a little place down there.
I believe it won't take much to convincing. Believe me. I love it here. Unbelievable. We've been at French Truck several mornings or afternoons, and.
Right.
Love French Truck coffee. All right.
What about Pagoda? You go to Pagoda?
No, I'll put that on the list, Pagoda.
That is, it's a Racing Form connection. Remember when Abram Himmelstein was our correspondent?
Yes.
His wife started that place. I haven't talked to her in a while. I assume she's still associated with it, but it's right down the street. If you take Gentilly, it turns into Bayou Road, and it's on Bayou Road just on the other side of Broad.
Outstanding.
Great.
All right.
Little place.
I will send you a detailed list of some discoveries this week that are shocking. Shocking.
Okay.
Outstanding.
All right. Well, I got my coffee. I'm back at my laptop.
All right.
I'm ready to rumble.
All right. Beautiful. Let's get, we're on tight timing because Steve Anderson has got the Grand National look, and you know Steve. He literally will have a stopwatch in his hand.
Okay. Cut me off.
Whatever
you need.
I wouldn't ever do that. Your Derby watch. You've been sending out some smoke signals about what your thoughts are as the field is currently assembled, and we'll see about disarm tomorrow out of the Lexington. But with the major preps over, Marcus, some overview from you.
Well, I have done an in-depth analysis of every prep race this year, plus the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And it's the first year I've done that, and it has been edifying. I mean, when you got to write about every horse, you really watch the races too many times. So, I feel like I know there's no stone that has not been turned over by my powers of analysis. So... Where does that get me? Not sure. I think it's going to be really interesting. I want to see who trains well. I mean, I have some horses I don't like that well, but I like a lot of horses. I sure would love to see the Santa Anita Derby runner-up get in, but that's going to take some doing. I mean, I wrote for the DRF today, the Derby Watch story about how the points are so high, and I know there are more points available this year, but even taking those extra points out of the equation, the bar is set higher than it has been in the past. And, you know, there are some, usually, you know, the horses, as you well know, that are not getting in, horses that maybe don't belong in the race, but that's not where we're at this year at all. With Mandarin Hero and Skinner, who else right on the outside looking in? I mean, you got the third place finisher from the Fountain of Youth in the Florida Derby. That's the kind of horse that always gets into the race. Cyclone Mischief. I don't fancy him, but yeah, it's a bit odd. I'm a little against Practical Move. I thought he was at the end of his distance rope the other day, but I could be wrong. I think I like Forte's race better than some people. I thought I really saw something at the very end of the race that he had a lot more in the tank than it might have been apparent superficially. That being said, I mean, he's no faster than a lot of these other horses, and I'm still, you know, Violence going a mile and a quarter, I'm gonna not believe it till I see it in the end. I think Tapit Trice is capable, but, you know, another shorter price who does not have the characteristics necessarily you'd want to see in a 20-horse field, especially if he gets drawn down inside. I think he's going to struggle a little bit. I guess we're out of horses. I don't know. I mean, I do think that the Derma Sotagake is going to be overbet this year, but I can't rule them out. I'm anti-UAE Derby as a rule just because of the history. I mean, Mendelssohn, I think, was a great reminder of how that racetrack can produce results that don't necessarily, they're not reproducible under different circumstances. But with that horse, you know, he's done a lot of different things. He's come from off the pace before. He's run on different kinds of services. And just the supposedly lesser horse, I thought he was probably best in the Santa Anita Derby. The way he showed up, I mean, I just wonder if not level, there's maybe a hint of superiority of Japanese horses to American horses right now.
All right. Well, we've got to get through this Lexington and see how Disarm. All he's got to do is be third to supplant Jace's Road and become.
Well, the Lexington is good this year.
Yes,
though.
It is.
And this is one of the best. It's maybe the best Lexington I can remember seeing.
And I have not looked at your game plan. So let's do game plan and start game planning.
Well, that is one of the races I chose, the Lexington, and I don't necessarily agree with the line. I thought that Disarm would be favored. Maybe I'll be wrong. I like Disarm. I mean, I thought he ran pretty well last time, but I am in Camp First Mission, who is 3-1. That'd be a little short for me. But I'm hoping it might go a little higher than that. Anyway, you were there for what? Were you there for either of that? You were there for that February race for him, right?
Yes.
And the March race. No, not the March race.
Not the March race.
The February race, I mean, Bishop's Bay, you know. Well, I thought that was the best maiden race easily of the whole meet at
right.
Fairgrounds. And this is a route horse who almost beat a really fast horse sprinting. Well, he didn't almost beat him. The other horse had something left. But I was very impressed with his stretch-out race. We'll see the St. John's horses in today, I think, at Caitlin, the horse that was second in that race. Also, I think the fourth place finisher, if I'm not misremembering. But I don't think those were bad horses, and he just laughed at them. I mean, when he was asked a little bit in upper stretch, he took off gallop at grade. I think there's a lot more there. I don't think he needs to be on the lead. And I think he's, you know, even at a shortish price, like 7-2, if he's the kind of horse I think he might be, that would look like a good price in retrospect.
You know, the other Cox, this Demolition Duke.
Yeah, he's good.
He's all right.
He's good.
Yeah.
Well. He's good. He ran right behind Bishop's Way. He showed me more than I expected, actually, last time. He's got a chance, and, I mean, you can't fault Empire Strikes Fast's race. I mean, nope. I don't think the wood was a key Derby prep, but the horse that this horse beat, you know, he's beaten two noses in it, and it was a legitimate race for, you know, for what it is. If he improves, I mean, he's going to be tough. So, I mean, tough race, very interesting race.
I will mention before we turn to the Jenny Wiley as well, you know, Dennington, when it came to looking at this race with the figures, Marcus, I was stunned, actually, that that he actually paired up, looking at Thoregraph, that he paired up that allowance win. And a forward move.
Wait. Yeah. Dennington and the Thoregraph paired up the allowance and the Louisiana Derby?
Correct.
Boy, the buyers have it 91.78.
I get that, but I think it's just the wide. You know, he was, what, 3-4 wide? Yeah, 3-4 wide in the first turn and 5 wide turning for home. So it's a ground loss. It's a ground loss figure.
Definitely, and he saved ground most of the way in the other race.
So
I don't like him. I mean, he was on Lasix in that win over Calios.
Yes, he was.
Tappet Shoes. And can I go on a little rant about this? This is unacceptable. It's bad for the horses, and how are we supposed to know which horses are being affected by this and not until it's too late, until we've spent our money?
Well,
Lasix off nonsense has got to end. I don't see anyone doing, like, taking it seriously at all. It's an absolute disaster. It's a joke. I'm not advocating one way or the other.
Yep.
I'm not here to do that right now. That is not what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I'm talking about consistency and being fair to the horses and the customers in this game. Please, somebody do something.
We will cut that little aside out and play it daily. Well said. Let's get the Jenny Wiley and the Count Fleet in here as well before Steve Anderson joins us.
Let's do it. In Italian, I think it's one of the best horses in the country. Any division, either sex. Love this horse. She just was so progressive throughout last year, and the mile 316th, I've seen her out just slightly beaten by an excellent horse in Tuesday in the Breeders' Cup, and I am trying to beat her nonetheless in the Jenny Wiley. You know, she's, to me, clearly the most likely winner. I don't expect that she's going to misfire badly, but she is. She wants to go forward, and this Freedom Speaks horse is stretching out. Should show speed. The trip could be less than ideal, and I just wanted to come back to White Frost, the connections. Mott's getting pretty aggressive. I love that. She was so much the best in the Honey Fox. She has tactical pace and ended up way too far behind the wire-to-wire winner and then came home at 22.35. She was a nice horse before her break. Showed some signs of being a pretty high class. I think after a long layoff, she's come back a fully mature and very improved mare, which is not totally obvious from the figures and the fact that she lost a grade 3 Honey Fox last time. I think she could get an excellent trip on the switch to Frankie Dettori. And I took a little shot at her to upset the big favorite in the Jenny Wiley.
Getting a lot of mention. I made a big case.
I don't like to hear that.
No, I know. I made a case for Queen Goddess coming off.
Goddess is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's part of my strategy in that if they take it in Italian back, Queen Goddess is going to be lapped on her and not let her out because Queen Goddess has got some pace and she's in great form. The race is interesting to me. In part, if the odds are right, because with the moonlight is 5-2, and I don't think that she's at this quality. I mean, I know she looked good in Dubai. Maybe she's got 4-year-old improvement in her. But based on what I saw last year, I don't like her in this spot.
The Count Fleet drew a nice field, and there's some fun opportunity in here as well.
Heard any scratches from this, Steve?
I have not, actually, but Mary Ramp, I could text Mary and see if she knows anything.
Yeah, I just feels like a race where there might be a scratch or two. Well, I think the line is wrong on this. I think Strobe is going to be the solid favorite. He's 7-2 on the line. I just can't imagine that. He's got the big figs. He gets hammered every time. He's Brad Cox, Godolphin. And I like the horse. I mean, he's very good. He hasn't beaten anything yet. Well, no offense to the horses behind them. I mean, those are solid horses, Ride of a Lifetime, Omaha Red. They're not going to be confused with stakes horses to me. I was impressed with the way he rated a little bit last time. But that being said, you know, this is going to be a much faster pace than he's been in. It's going to ask him the question, like, what can you do when things aren't, you don't have things easy. And I don't want a short price on that. This horse, Skelly, really caught my eye when he won on the 17th of March.
Yep.
Show talent all along. He had a terrible trip in the slop in December 10th, but he handled the slop just fine in February. And there is a chance of rain. I don't think that'll hurt him. I know the pace looks like it may be against him, but what I noticed was how fast he ran his fifth furlong last time. I think, and that was after taking some pressure. Even if he's under pressure, if he comes from the 3/8 pole to the top of the stretch like he did in his last race, and he could run even better. I mean, when these Aspison sprinters start to get good, they sometimes get better than we even realize until it's happened. I think he might be a little bit overlooked in the betting. I know all signs point to Tejano Twist getting the setup again. I just think this is a tougher race than last time. He's already like peaked so many times this winter. He shouldn't be able to do it again, and I'm betting that he's not.
Skelly absolutely makes some sense. Candyman Rocket third off the layoff.
It's interesting, but he just has not been fast enough for me yet, and it was such a poor. I think he's going to get the trip, but I don't know that he's got the quality. We'll see.
Well, Frank Fletcher in attendance, it's my big day, big owner theory.
Well, Alvarado has given up Keeneland to ride this horse.
There you go.
Apparently, that's what it looks like.
There you go.
If you want to play jockeyologist.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch, as we inch closer toward the Ville and Derby. Marcus, this was fabulous. Go enjoy that second cup.
Enjoy NOLA. Good to talk to you, Steve.
Thanks, Marcus. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Let's quickly turn it around. I'm only a minute late getting to Steve Anderson, who is probably on pins and needles watching the action from Aintree. But we could not go the morning without at least 5 minutes discussion of the Grand National. And, of course, Joe Clancy helped us a little bit yesterday with some reference. Let's get Steve Anderson. Well, maybe we get Steve Anderson. There he is. It is.
Hey,
Steve. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm terrific, and I could not let this Friday go without a Grand National look. And who better than you?
I'm sorry to be a little frazzled right now. I was just talking to one of the guys from Ladbrokes Coral Bookmakers and talking to him about what impact this race has on their betting company. And he told me that he expects it to be 150 million pounds, so about $175 to $185 million to be bet on this race nationwide by all this country's bookmakers. That doesn't include the totes tomorrow. So it's fascinating to see how much this race really captures the attention of the British and Irish betting markets. This is the race where everybody in the pub, everybody in the office, everybody in the social group has a bet. You know, whether it's $2, $5, $10, or so or more, they're going to get involved. And with a 40-horse field, it's easy to find something to pick, whether you go by names, there's jockeys, trainers, you name it. There's usually something to back, and it's the build-up to this, the first time I've witnessed it in person, is fascinating so far. It's 26 hours to go.
I love it.
And it's really going to be fascinating to see what does settle down. The favorite as of the moment is Ain't That a Shame, one for your old rock and roll fans. That's an 8-1 favorite right now for a very popular combination from Ireland of, sorry, the voice in the background, of Henry de Bromhead, the trainer, and Rachel Blackmore, the jockey. They're an excellent team, and they have a horse that just won a prep race at 2.5 miles last month at Gowran Park in Ireland in the 2-2 year layoff. So they've got a good contender that'll be very good on what is likely to be soft ground. It's been raining for the last couple hours here, and just over the Mercy River now, I can see a little bit of blue sky for the first time since this morning. So I think the rain's gotten into the ground, though, because the jockeys are coming back pretty muddy from the first 3 of the 7 races run today so far. So very interesting to see how conditions have changed just in the last 24 hours here.
Well, and Steve, that it's interesting that Ain't That a Shame is trading to favoritism, because when I checked yesterday, you were getting in the 15, you know, sort of in the 15 to 1 range.
And that's the, sorry to interrupt you, that's something that happens during this race's buildup, and it'll happen again in the morning perhaps, or tomorrow as the race approaches, is they'll beat Steam Horse, a public snowball, that'll just take over and, you know, go from, like you say, go 6 numbers down, from 14 down to 8 in this case. You're not going to get something that's going to go too clear below 8 to 1 in this open 40 horse race. A few years ago, Tiger Roll won the race as the 4 to 1 favorite. That's not happening this year. There's no 4 to 1 standout in this 40 runner field. It's going to be a lot more wide open than that. And it's worth remembering that last year the winner was 50 to 1. And in the last decade, there's been a 66, 225s, and a 33 to 1 winner. So the thing to remember about making a pick for this race, whether you're going to invest heavily or lightly, don't just look at the first 4 in the betting like so many of us would do in a race where we're kind of looking at something for the first time. And you look across a field and you think, well, you know, this guy won at 3 miles last year. That fourth mile may be within his reach. And the other factor is the weight. You know, I don't want to hear another trainer complain to me about weights in a 6-furlong race after what I'm going to witness tomorrow. I can assure you of that. Looking at these guys going anywhere from 166 to 140 pounds, that's a bit of a different ballgame going 4.25 miles or so. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds tactically over the two circuits of this racetrack.
Steve Anderson with us live from Aintree. And Steve, in addition to Ain't That a Shame, Noble Yates, who I know Kev Humphreys likes, Corrick Rambler, Delta Work, Galliard du Manil, give us some top line, major choices.
Noble Yates is trying to become the first 2-time winner of the race since Tiger Roll in 2019. He was 50 to 1 last year, as I mentioned. He's 12 to 1 right now. He carries 165, the second highest weight in the race. This 8-year-old is going to be asked to do a lot on sticky ground in those conditions. And to his credit, he was 4th in the Cheltenham Gold Cup last month, a race that compares very closely to the Breeders' Cup Classic in terms of being a weight for age championship race. So he's got credentials, but he's being asked to do a lot compared to what he did last year. Corrick Rambler at 145 pounds is a 9-year-old who won at Cheltenham in the Ultimate Handicap at 3-mile, 1-furlong race that oftentimes is a precursor to this for many horses. They may not always win that and then win this, but it is a key prep race being in 8 miles. It's kind of funny to talk to people about it because they talk about their horse's chances in the 3-miler and they go, yeah, you should be finishing well. He gets warmed up after about 2.5 miles. Fascinating to hear people say that. That horse is 9 to 1. Corrick Rambler. Think about Corrick Rambler. I may have just said this. 145 pounds, low weight, easy to like. Ground might be a little bit against him. He might want it a little tighter than this soft, but he's got a chance. Delta Work is 10-year-old. He won a 3-mile, 3/4 cross country race over banks, hedges, fences, water jumps, obstacles, and a variety of things at Cheltenham. That's a good precursor for this, because these are tough fences. These are 5'2" and less, so they're tough to do. My pick is Coco Beach, 28 to 1 this morning. 8-year-old who won and punched us down a 3.5-mile race earlier this year. Didn't run in March. Has been kind of rested for this a little bit. A very capable jockey called Harry Cobden rides for one of the leading Irish trainers, Gordon Elliott, who has 6 in the race, including Delta Work. Coco Beach should stay the distance. He should handle the soft turf. And that, I think, will work in his favor at a price. I think it's kind of fun to try to pick one or two that might be a little bit outside the first 4 in the betting, but of the top picks, Korak Rambler, I think, is preferred by, I would prefer that one to Delta Work. But I'll put Cocoa Beach on top and take my chances with that 8-year-old.
Cocoa Beach is the 11 for those taking notes. Kev's price play is Lifetime Ambition. And then, of course, there's the American story, the American connected story of Cape Gentleman, which is really kind of a cool story that hasn't gotten enough publicity, you know, tying back 100 years to the American family connections. Pretty amazing, actually, that this is out, that this story is, you know, out there, and I haven't seen much written about Sergeant Murphy and the 1923 Grand National, but I know that you know about it.
Yes, so the horse was bought around Christmas time.
Yep.
By Pierre Manigeau. I may have mispronounced his name, from Charleston, South Carolina. His great uncle won the race 100 years ago. So it's really fascinating to draw a connection between those two a century later. They're bringing a big group of people over. Horse hasn't won since October of 2021 in a 2.5 mile race at Cork. And that's one of my concerns, is that he's just a long time between wins. So it's a big ask to get this horse. However, 80-1 is worth a try. And the other thing about him is he's trained by Shark Hanlon, who won the Breeders' Cup jump race at Far Hills last year.
Yep.
With Hemick, who was supposed to be here for this race until he fell at Cheltenham a few weeks ago, and then they've given up on him for the year, and they're going to run him. Or giving up on him for the season. Let me be clear. I think they're going to try to bring him back to New Jersey next year. As for Lifetime Ambition, no reason not to like him. He hasn't won since a year ago at Limerick, when he won a novice's case, going 3 miles. He has been second, third, or fourth in his last 6 races. And he was third in a hurdles race, interestingly, going 2 miles, 7 furlongs, which was clearly a prep race for this. That was back in March 18th. And he's been in with some tough, very tough, actually, Irish 2.5 mile weight for age horses, including one of them. If you guys are watching DRF Bets, or if you're looking at some other races right now, just a few minutes away from a very tough grade one here. Fakir Duardries, who beat that horse, Lifetime Ambition, runs in. And that is the one race at the bottom of the hour. He's favorite right now to win the Marsh Steeplechase, going 2.5 miles. And that's trained by Joseph O'Brien, interestingly, who won a race yesterday here with a very nice chaser called Banbridge. So there's a connection between what's about to happen in a few minutes to Lifetime Ambition. This track is about to have its 4th of 7 races today. This is the 3rd of 4 grade one races today. This one's worth about $312,000 US. So good prize money on the line for horses that are highly qualified, but not Grand National horses. Should be noted, in conclusion, the Grand National is a handicap. It is not a weight for age race. And a lot of the top runners that run 3 miles, 2 miles, and 3 miles in steeplechases do stick to the weight for age races. You do see a little bit of crossover in from the weight for age into the handicaps, but by and large, and the handicap horses that run in the Grand National are a different group than what we would consider to be the top runners, like a Breeders' Cup Classic type horse. So this sport is big enough that it has two different groups. We don't have that handicap division anymore in the United States in anything, really, which is kind of a disappointment. But this is why you see weight for age horses running in certain races and not in the Grand Nationals, because they'd all be on 160 plus, 165 pounds. That's a lot of weight for 2 miles.
For sure. Steve, this was fabulous. I'm delighted you're there. I'm going to put a poll up. I'm going to ask people their choice, Grand National, Melbourne Cup, Arc de Triomphe, or the Kentucky Derby. What's the best race in the world?
Yeah, I would vote. I've been to a few of them, and I'll put the Breeders' Cup Classic high on my list as well.
Wow!
And it's because it's you know, the best America has in all the age groups, and this is Cheltenham Gold Cup's way up on my list too. But
yeah,
I'm eager to see what tomorrow's experience is like and how that rates against having been fortunate to see some really fine racing worldwide. So that's the report for the entry.
Steve Anderson, everybody, who's just unbelievable and loves the jumpers, loves Cheltenham, and now gets a Grand National. Steve, have a great time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Steve Anderson, live from Aintree. Fabulous. I'm a little surprised. And I had Cheltenham Gold Cup on my original list. My original list of 7 had Derby, Melbourne Cup, Arc, Grand National, Cheltenham Gold Cup, Dubai World Cup, Breeders' Cup Classic. And he went for the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Cheltenham Gold Cup. You know what? Well, should really have one of those play downs. It's more of a March Madness probably conversation, right? Anyway, that occurred to me this morning when I knew I was going to reach out to Steve, or at least get a Grand National glance in. Let's take our only break of the morning, and for a moderately quiet weekend, we certainly have been racing around the Oval this morning between Marty and James Scully and Marcus and Steve Anderson. Second half coming up. Scott Shapiro, Callie Francois, Nick Tamaro, Hammer, and Billy Stinson Jr. We're packing a lot in today. I didn't necessarily expect we would be as loaded with pithy race talk. And a little coffee, it all. It's what you get here. So essentially, Steve wants the price, right? He wants Cocoa Beach, the 11. If you're taking notes, to bet tomorrow. And what time? Let me see. What time is this? This goes off tomorrow at, it's the 17:15. So 2:15. So what, 10:15, 11:15, 12:15, 1:15, 2:15? No, 9:15. Right? It's 5 hours. So are we at 5 hours or 4 hours right now? I think maybe we're at 4 hours. Right? So 10:15. Ten fifteen tomorrow, I guess. I'll confirm that. Delta Work is the 7, and Cocoa Beach the 11, so that's easy enough to remember. Kev will have his official, and I'm sure he's monitoring the prices too in the morning, but Kev was leaning toward Noble Yates, who's the 2, and his price was Lifetime Ambition, the 9. So 2-9 for Kev, and 7-11. For Steve Anderson, DRF Anderson. He usually goes to Cheltenham every year, and I guess this year he chose to take in his first Grand National. Very cool. All right, bottom of the hour is here. Let's get the break in, come back, and get rolling. Our last 90 minutes here in New Orleans. Scott Shapiro joins us next. Callie Francois, Nick Tamaro, Rick Hammerly, and Billy Stinson. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.